Welcome everyone to our pre-presentation podcast on science of practicing medicine. Today we have Donna Harris with us again. Hello, Donna.
Hi.
Well, welcome back. And I say welcome back because we did a clinical podcast a few months back on pre-diabetes. So now we are talking about what happens after, which is diabetes, and that's going to be the second week of February. So with that, let's get right into it. First, I wanted to talk about what services do we offer in Centro Care for Diabetes Care, in the sense of who does diabetes care in depth and in what subdivisions, if you will, and so on and so forth.
Well, there is the endocrinology department that does diabetes management, but there's also the diabetes center, which is staffed by diabetes educators, nurses, and dietitians who have special training in diabetes management. And they are kind of our first line of defense. We really recommend that primary care utilize those services because they are great resources and have a wealth of knowledge for management of diabetes.
In which Centro Care locations is this available?
Almost all of them, yeah. I mean, they're housed in the plaza, but they also go to primary care locations and also the outreach. I know Wilmer has their own diabetes educators there mm-hmm. as well. So they're easy to find.
Okay. Now, unfortunately, diabetes is bread and butter, no pun intended, kind of condition to deal for primary care. So in the past, again, we talked about pre-diabetes, and that's in a way a little more straightforward than diabetes and all its ramifications. So the first question is, do you think everybody who has diabetes should have at least one visit to diabetes educators?
Very much so.
Okay. Are we doing that or we are not doing that?
We are not doing that. And I think that's unfortunate. I mean, there's much that can be helped with kind of the behavioral portions of diabetes management. There's lots of good tools available from medication standpoint. And I think we sometimes forget the other behavioral things that would also be beneficial. And the educators are great for all that.
Do you have local numbers on how we are doing in using that versus state or national goals or numbers?
I don't. I know that the diabetes center director tracks that all the time. And
okay. So perhaps something to talk about in your live presentation. Okay. So the next question will be, do you know of numbers how we are doing for diabetes care in general versus goals and the context of the state and national?
From our Centro Care goals, we're doing pretty good. The D5 measures, which are A1C, lipid management, blood pressure, tobacco, and aspirin, are pretty good. They're in the 50 percentile, and we're close to that across the board. And I think we're one of the top areas in the state that are managing that. And so we need to be proud of that. But we always tend to go up and down a bit. And, we don't want to sit on our laurels.
Sure, sure. And of course, everybody knows that the context is that diabetes is only going to get worse over the next decades.
Yeah.
Okay. So somebody has a patient with diabetes, whether they have pre-diabetes or not, et cetera. Number one, all of them should have at least a visit to diabetes education. Number two, in what kind of patients should they be thinking about sending the patient to somebody with diabetes expertise? And who is that person with diabetes expertise beyond the diabetes education?
That would be the endocrine department. I mean, the endocrinologist as well as our advanced practice providers deal with diabetes management all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The question of when you refer is that if you have a patient who's difficult to get motivated, A1C improvement, or you've tried all the tricks that you are comfortable with,
okay.
We're glad to jump in to help with that.
So you don't have, from the purpose of referral process, a diabetes expert. It's just plain endocrinology. You place a referral for diabetes care.
Correct, correct.
Okay.
Probably the majority of the diabetes management is done with the advanced practice providers
You mean the ones in the diabetes education or in endocrinology?
in endocrinology. Yeah,
Okay.
yeah.
Okay.
So the physicians do diabetes management, but they do all the other esoteric endocrine stuff as well.
I like the esoteric is the non-diabetes in your mind, it appears.
Yeah.
Like these obscure things like hyperthyroidism or hypothyroidism, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. So how busy are you? You think you should be busier? You get patients a little too late compared on when you should get them. What's your feel on that?
Well, I mean, the referral process and how quickly we get patients in is challenging. We have hired extra advanced practice providers, so access to getting into endocrinology is improving for diabetes management. So that's fairly quick. You know, if I get a referral for a patient who's got advanced diabetic neuropathy because they've had 25 years of poor diabetes control, I'm not going to be able to help that neuropathy. I might be able to improve their blood sugar control, but unfortunately may not improve their neuropathy.
So, for how long have you been doing diabetes in center care?
20 years.
Okay, so you started in late high school, kind of thing.
Yes.
Okay. So, in the last 20 years, do you think we gotten better of how late you get the patients?
Oh, there are so many more tools that we have now that I
Okay.
think the ability to get people under control is a lot easier than it was in 2005 when I started.
Okay, so your tools, your medication probably, and your management strategies.
Yeah, and the technology that's available.
Sure. Okay, so somebody wants to refer a patient to endocrinology for diabetes care. Is it a straight consult? Do you do e-consults?
Yes, but probably e-consults are not going to be the most efficient because it's not just a one-time do this and then you're done. I mean, it's going to be a long-term responsibility. If somebody just has questions about how do I do this? Yeah, I mean that's reasonable. Or I'm not comfortable. What's your best drug in this situation? You know, I think that's a reasonable approach, but you know, it's going to be a long-term relationship, I would think.
Okay. And if I understand correctly, all the endocrinologists are in St. Cloud, correct?
Correct.
Do you offer teleconsults, video
Yes.
consults? You
Yes.
do.
Yes.
Okay, so that's in the referral you request consult for teleconsultation. Is that how you enter the order?
I don't think there's a specific button for telecommunication part.
In the comments, I presume you put that.
Yeah, and many of the physicians prefer video.
Okay, what's your wait time?
For diabetes, I would say within a month or so because we
Okay.
have availability because of our APP availability.
Okay.
Other endocrine consults are probably 6 months unless it's urgent. We have urgent spots.
Okay. I wanted to pick your brain in two aspects, and this is where I go to more general concepts, right? Because you've been doing diabetes for so long. The first one is, what is the next frontier in diabetes care, in the sense of we have much better medications, ways to diagnose, to catch things early, to manage things early. What is the big thing in diabetes that we are still not there?
Well, probably the prevention. I
The
mean, you know,
prevention.
there is, you know, the information on type 1 prevention, but you know, that's multiple thousands of dollars and it just delays type 1 from occurring. You know, I don't know, though it's the prevention of type 2 which is the biggest player on the block. Yeah.
Okay.
For management of diabetes with insulin, it's the automated insulin delivery systems, you know, and those integrated algorithms that administer insulin based on where your blood sugar is on your continuous monitor.
Yeah. It's always fascinating for me to see things that I don't do, and I only record recall from school and internal medicine training,
Sure.
the changes are mind-blowing when I try to catch up with things. And I think diabetes is one of them. So the next question is, why you think, and I know the answer may be relatively easy, but I'm interested in your thoughts, why you think pre-diabetes and diabetes are becoming so pervasive, so common?
Well, it has to do with the, you know, body habitus of our nation, you know, or of the world. I mean, a lot of it is inactivity. It's weight driven.
But you see a lot of people who are not particularly overweight and they have type 2 diabetes. Of course, there's a genetic component, right?
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. But, you know, when you look at the demographics and the epidemiology of where our weight has been over the last 20 years, I mean, it really is that makes diabetes very, very challenging. I mean,
okay, this is an idea that I have, and of course I have patients that I do a half primary care, or if you will. I think we have become too we let people do almost whatever they want with the diet, and we said, okay, we understand it's difficult, let's go to medication, so we accept that that's going to fail, in part because of patient satisfaction and all of that, versus saying, this has to stop or you go to diabetes, and say, you know, once you have diabetes, that's really bad, we shouldn't get there, we should work better on your way. Do you think we have become too, or I would say non-aggressive in pushing for people to lose weight?
Well, I mean, obesity is such a challenging situation because there are so many psychosocial components to it, you know, that, and as somebody who struggled with their weight their whole life, I mean, I gained and lost 1,000 pounds, I think, in my life, you know, and so I understand that from a personal standpoint, that it's wonderful that we have these tools. But again, I think that whole behavioral piece is really important as well. You know, that you have to make choices. And, you know, we have to be maybe not stern, but firm with our patients that, you know, how can I help you? You know, I mean, I can give you tools, but you do have to do something as well.
Your part.
So
the next kind of area I wanted to ask you about is what I would call, or what is called, I guess, the pipeline. You know, there used to be a time there was a couple of types of insulin. You had to prick your finger all the time to get your sugars. You know, now you see this thing with the iPhone. It's kind of mind-blowing. We are seeing it in many diseases. I see it in HIV, and it's in rheumatoid arthritis and things like that. So what's in the pipeline? I always think of one, for example, oral insulin. I don't know, you think that's ever going to happen? And what's in the pipeline otherwise for other things?
There are additional incretin hormones, you know, because we have the GLP-1 and now the GLP-GIP agent, the tirzepatide, but there's a 3-hormone option that's in the development and a 4-hormone. So all of those incretins are in development at this time. I don't know about the oral insulin. There has been a ultra long acting insulin that had been in trials, but I don't know where that sits right now. So there's lots and lots of things for type 2 management. I don't know where the type 1 management is going, other than the more technology and the integrated systems.
Okay. And the last question is, I want to get your thoughts on GLP-1s, because I see it like a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it's like amazing, right? It can change the economy of the country almost in preventing, etc. But on the other one, it's yet another iteration of you party all you want. We had this medication for you, and you know it can become unsustainable. Do you think it's going to be something that will come and go, or you think it's here to stay and it's going to change the landscape of diabetes? What are your thoughts on them?
Well, I think it's probably here to stay, because the studies about chronic kidney disease and GLP-1 agonists have just been published. And so there's more and more data that, you know, it has more benefit in many, many ways. And so, I mean, I think that we need to approach it in that this is a useful tool for you, but you still have to be part of the equation, you know?
Sure. It's fascinating to me to see that how it became day-to-day discussion, right? These GLP-1s and injectable, and you see it on commercials, of course, and
yeah.
It's almost like a trivial thing, but how is, wow, you see, I have patients that, boom, they drop weight, and it's just a game changer.
Well, it is a game changer. You know, it's not without side effects and not without, you know, cost to the patient and cost to the economy. And,
sure.
You know, so does somebody who has 10 pounds to lose need to be on tirzepatide? No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, I mean, all of that kind of boutique kind of medicine. You know, which is,
yes,
I mean,
yes.
I thought was just in California, but it's here in St. Cloud as well.
Okay. Yeah, but it's fascinating to see, because to me it's a correlation uh-huh. with the CABG to stents to statins. And now we go from, you know, from the gastric bypass to less aggressive surgery to now we add medications. It's just, since it's in our lifetime, we don't see it. But when you
exactly.
stop and compare a couple of decades before, it's just amazing. I'm really looking forward to this. I got a preview of your slides. There's a lot of great information.
Thank
so
you.
I'm really
Thank you.
Looking forward to your presentation in Science of Practicing Medicine.
I'm glad to do it.
Thank you for joining me.
You bet.